Hello and welcome to Beyond the Paradigm. I'm your host, Paul. Welcome back if you're a regular listener. And for anyone who is listening for the first time, this is a podcast in which I seek to expose the lies and hopefully point people towards the truth. And I've had a few guests on today who have all done extensive research on various topics. Most of them have written books and some of them have done documentaries. However, today I have with me another published author, but this guest today is slightly different than my other guests because this guest's book is about a personal experience, an actual lived experience. But I want to warn my listeners that this episode is going to be a really challenging episode. It's going to challenge your worldview and it'll be at times a little disturbing. So I'm going to say this as a disclaimer. I would warn against you listening to this episode out aloud near small children. Today I'm joined by Karen Wilkinson and she is the author of a newly released book called Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest. So prepare to have your mind blown. It's time to bring Karen onto the show.
The truth. We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
They come and they take the baby at the end of the third month. They abduct the baby.
Hello, Karen, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Paul. Thank you. I am so happy to be here with you today. I feel like we're old friends. We talked a little bit, and I feel like we've known each other forever. So, great. Really happy to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, so, guys, we're just having a little chat off air like we always do, and I can tell you that this is going to be a fascinating topic. It's also going to be a challenging topic, but I would, like I said, in my introduction, you need to remain open-minded. This is a topic that is touching every culture around the world. It doesn't matter what gender you are, what sphere of society you're from. This is a phenomenon that is touching everybody around the world. Now, normally, guys, when I have an interview with somebody, it's somebody who's been doing research on a topic, and it's not always someone who's experienced something firsthand. But Karen's on today, and she's going to share her experiences of something that has happened many times to her over the years. So it's a firsthand experience, not just research knowledge, it's actual firsthand knowledge. So just to sort of lay the foundation for the interview, Karen, could you just give us a little bit about your background, your sort of upbringing and everything? Because when I've looked into the UFO phenomena in the past, a lot of people who have had abduction experiences have also had some kind of occult in the background. Could you just lay sort of a foundation regarding leading up to when it first happened to you, like your family life and everything like that?
Sure. There was some kind of occult things in my background. There was members of the Masons, the Freemasons group, high level members in my family. And I was actually inducted into the youth level group of that. My parents were both in it in college. And then I was inducted into that as a young adult. I think I was 14, I think, into what they call Rainbow Girls. And so we had, and obviously did not stick with it. It was not for me. It was just, ugh. You could just feel how creepy it was. So that we had a lot of that in the family and some other things. I mean, you know, there were the normal Ouija board and things like that going on in the families and stuff like that. But beyond that, not much. I mean, I grew up in the central U.S. around an area with a lot of native, what they call Native American burial grounds, but they're not, you know, we know these are probably Nephilim mounds, or, you know, these mounds are ancient earthworks. Let's put it that way. I don't want to jump ahead too far. So I grew up in an area with a lot of ancient earthworks as well. And we went to those, played around those a lot growing up. So there were a lot of things that were, you know, just strangeness, but I don't think those are necessarily the reasons why this happened to me my whole life, but I think there had some impact on some of the things that have happened for sure. So, but I grew up just a fairly normal middle-class, you know, American family, Central America, you know, there was a family farm, which is where a lot of this happened. And it started from as early as I can remember in my childhood.
It's interesting you mentioned them mounds, actually, because like we were talking off air, I now live in North Wales, and I had been driving past an ancient mound every Sunday to church for 3.5 years, and I didn't know about it. And it turns out it's actually the second biggest mound in Britain, and it's literally 5 minutes from my house. So I went up there and I investigated the area and everything, and there's actually a cave system underneath it. So just when you were mentioning that, you the biggest we have in Britain is in England, Silbury Hill, and this is actually the second biggest, but hardly anyone knows about it.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. I mean, I've heard of Silbury Hill, and I've spent, you know, enough time in England. But
well, this one in where I live is called Gop Hill Cairn. You can look it up online, but I went there, and I've been driving right past
down,
it.
I want to look it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. And but, there's a cave system under. Sorry, I'm not interviewing you. I'm sorry.
No. There is a cave system under there. Yeah, I sort of went into the caves a little bit, but I had no caving equipment, so I was like, yeah, I think I better stop going any further in case I get stuck.
And get prayed up, and be careful before you do that, because you don't know what you're walking into in these places, and there's tends to be a lot of high strangeness around them just because of, you know, what has happened there and what's still happening in some of those areas. Yeah. But
sure, well, the pathway up to it's called Pilgrim's Way. So obviously there was things going on there years ago. But just so you've wrote a book called Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest.
Yes.
So just for my listeners, could you just give us a, before we get into sort of the meat of the interview and the details of it, could you give us a little overview of the book, please?
Sure. So the book is basically a sort of a biography of the things that have happened to me in my life, the things that I've experienced and some of the abduction experiences, and not just that, not just those things, but also some of the really positive experiences that I've had with God in my life as well. It's a really high level overview. There is a lot of scripture in the book because I try to relate everything back to the biblical references and how the biblical paradigm and this phenomenon come together and how they're related, and where the Bible talks about all of these things, about UFOs, about what we call alien entities and UFOs and those things. It's all in our Bible. So I relate my history and the things that have happened to me. And then I also talk about, and I try to keep it high level because I don't want to trigger anyone who might have been through something like this. I don't want to make it too scary. I don't want to make it something that could cause someone to panic or be afraid to read the book. It's not scary. It's not something anyone should be afraid to read. But I also talk about how I was able to make these things stop. And that was through God, you know, the glory of God that these things stopped and that I was able to be freed from this. And so I talk about how you can stop this, and just, I wrote the book because I want it to be okay to talk about these things. There are a lot of people going through this. It's not an unusual circumstance. It's not an unusual situation. It's a common situation and a common circumstance for many more people than you would believe. But people are afraid to talk about it because there's such a stigma behind it. And I want it to be able to, for people to have that conversation and to find a place to go if they need help, or to be able to talk about it, to deal with the problems that come with it, to stop it. Number one thing is to stop it. And that's the number one reason I wrote the book.
Yeah, that was partially my intention with this interview as well, that because I know that it's a phenomenon that's ubiquitous. And if there is anyone going to be listening to this, I just want to assure them that, you know, there's people out there that will believe them. I'm one of them. And I know you are as well, Karen.
Yep. You can go to my website, send me a message, and I will get back to you. Sometimes it takes a while if I get a lot of messages, but I will do my best to get back to you. So, yeah, absolutely. Reach out to someone. Sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. So you was abducted multiple times over a number of years. How old were you when it first happened?
My earliest memories are of being taken. I mean, I don't know exactly how young I was, but from as early young as I can remember. So, you know, LA, my friend LA Marzulli, who you've talked to, I interviewed with him. That's when I first was able to start talking about this. I said, you know, 5 or 6 is probably when I first remember. And that's when most people have more vivid memories of things that happen in their lives. Yeah. I don't remember time being little that I wasn't afraid of them showing up or coming to get me at night, that I wasn't thinking, where can I hide? What can I do to stop this? You know, how can I protect myself from this? So it was definitely something that was happening from before I probably have memories, and then continued on throughout my life until I was born again. I was first born again at 18 and it stopped. And then I fell away and it started again until I again rededicated my life to the Lord a couple of years ago and was able to stop it again.
Okay. So in terms of the abduction then, how did it take place? What was like the mechanism? How was you taken?
It varies from one time to another. The average experience, and it's funny because I've talked to a lot of abductees, and there are 4 of us in L.A. Marzulli's 4th UFO film, and we all have a very similar experience. And you feel it come into the room. You just feel a change. You feel evil. You just feel something different, something changing, like just an evil presence before anything's even there. It's like a change in the air. And generally, there's sleep paralysis that goes along with that. You find yourself, you're awake and aware, but you can't move. You can't speak. You can't do anything. As a small child, often there would be a couple of the shorter grays that would show up in the foot of the bed kind of area, or beside the bed, or outside a window. And that's generally how it would start. And you just felt this evil presence. I just always felt this evil presence. And then I would feel my body usually generally levitate sometimes. Sometimes you're just knocked out. Sometimes I would be knocked out at that point and kind of switched off and don't remember anything else. And sometimes I would feel myself levitate off the bed or from wherever I was, on the couch or chair, what have you. And you just feel, you see everything, you know, like a ceiling or a window come close, and you go up through a ceiling or out a window. And you're thinking, you know, how is this happening? How am I going through a ceiling? How am I going out a window? Why am I right up close to this lamp on the ceiling? Or why can I see the screen up next to my face or something like that? And you feel this just change in your body. You feel like almost this vibration, like your molecular, not that I would know what, you know, how to describe it in any kind of scientific terms, but you feel like you're falling, coming apart in pieces almost, like you're made out of ball bearings or something. It's very hard to describe. And then the next thing, usually I know I would be switched off and end up somewhere else. And at that point it would be wherever they had taken me that time. Most of the times it was to what was an underground facility. I knew it was underground. There were no windows, no natural light. And there was an elevator that I would go on that was definitely like an up and down, or it's so weird, but like a elevator that went almost like downhill, not straight up and down, but but on an angle. And then when I was little, I used to talk about the train, the elevators that went side to side really fast, because I didn't know what it was. And then my husband's like, do you think that was a train? And I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, because there were seats in it, so I bet that was a train. And because people talk about these high-speed underground trains, I never really put it together. But what I felt and what I was describing, it was so cold, and it was, you know, you could tell it was moving, but it wasn't bumpy like a train. That's why I never put that together. It felt like an elevator. It was smooth. It just, you know, you just were moving. So that's kind of your general scenario every time it would happen. And from there, it was different every time, whatever they wanted, whatever would happen. And I outlined some of the different kinds of scenarios in the book as far as the things that would happen at different times.
So when they came and you levitated and everything, did you notice like a light or anything shining through the window, like a almost, you know, like a colored, like a white light or a colored light or anything?
Sometimes there would be light. Sometimes there would definitely be just this light shining like over the hill and down, and you see it into the, or if I was in another place, maybe up the road and into the window, you know, just thinking about the different places I've been. Sometimes there was definite light, and there was light, you felt like you were in the light when you were going up. Like you weren't, like the room is dark all around you, but you felt like you were in some sort of light. Or me, I shouldn't say you, because it wasn't you. I felt like, you know, I was in some sort of light. So it felt like there was light around, but not, I could never tell where the source for the light was, especially as a little kid. You know, I'm like, where's that light coming from? Like it seemed like when I was little, like the way a security light might come on and come into the room at night from some, that's what it would be like. All of a sudden it was just like, boom, there's this light in the window. And that was another trigger, you know, something was going to happen. And then you start to panic. And, you know, as a child, it's terrifying to have that happen over and over again, you know, and as an adult, it's terrifying. The terrifying part doesn't go away until you learn to deal with it, until you learn to stop it. Then you don't have, it's still terrifying, but you don't have to deal with that terror anymore.
So when, so there's a beam of light, you're levitating. Is there any noise or a change? And is there a change in the temperature in the room? You said you felt like there was an evil presence. Did the room temperature change? Was there any noise?
You know, I don't remember the room temperature ever changing, but sometimes there's like this low hum. And I think it kind of goes along with the vibrational effects that you feel, that I would feel, because I say you, because I'm used to talking to my friends about this who've been through it. Sorry. But sometimes with the vibrational effects that I would feel, because that hum would get lower and lower sometimes, or louder and louder, like it fills you. And it almost feels like that hum is what's breaking your body apart into pieces, you know? And so sometimes I would hear that. And I think that has to do with either maybe how much, how shut off I was at the moment, or if, if I was more awake, so I was more aware of it. But it, most of the time there was this very low hum, not right away, not, you know, not when the light showed up, or not even necessarily when the grays would show up, but more when the leaving the room part would start. That's when you notice the hum. Sometimes it'd be before that, but not usually.
Just for people who possibly might not have a lot of knowledge of UFOs, when Karen's talking about the gray, she means the typical little entities that you see with the bulbous heads and the black almond shape eyes. And that's so from then on, when we talk about greys, that's what we're talking about. You talked about, obviously, when they took you away and, you know, you went on a lift somewhere or a monorail type thing. And this is like one of these deep underground military bases, I suspect, secret facility. Yeah. Right. So when you when they took you there, did they take you to, where did they take you? Obviously, they took you to like a room or whatever. What was the place like that they took you? Was it always the same room?
No, it wasn't always the same room. It was often different, different rooms, often the same facility, I will say that, because I kind of got familiar with this one particular facility that had an area that was older, almost seemed like carved out stone type hallways and rooms, and they were smaller and you could tell they were older. And then there were it was an area, another part of it that seemed more modern, like hallways and more organized and really huge rooms and different things in it. And that seemed to be the place I was most often. And then sometimes there were places I had no idea. I didn't recognize, you know, from ever being there before. I didn't remember being there before. It doesn't mean I wasn't. I just didn't remember. But usually it was the same place and usually, you know, similar beings around me.
So when you arrived at these facilities, was you like, when you came out of the craft or whatever, was you taken out and you was in like a hangar? Was you outside and then led in? What?
No, you know, usually I didn't have a lot of, especially being little, memories of getting, once I was like up through the ceiling and out of the house, then I think a lot of times at that point, I was probably pretty upset and they would switch me off because I was pretty upset, you know. And then I would wake up somewhere else. So I would wake up on a table being examined, or I would wake up, you know, in a facility sitting, you know, in a chair against a wall with other, maybe some other people, or in a little room with other kids or things like that. So I didn't have a lot of younger memories of necessarily going from one place and landing in a hangar and getting out of it. Although I did have a lot of memories of seeing everything below, you know, when we were going to and from places. But, you know, I'm also piecing a lot of bits and pieces of memories together sometimes, because some of them I have really vivid memories of periods of time and things that happen. But when you're talking about a lifetime of these experiences, you have, you know, some time here and some time there that you remember, but there's so much in between where you just have little snapshots of what's happening and you don't have the whole thing, because they do shut you down. They do block your memories. They give you what's called screen memories. And a screen memory is when they'll replace something that's happened or while it's happening with something else. It's like putting on VR goggles, a virtual reality goggles maybe. And so instead of being there, being examined, you think you're sitting on a beach, you know, and maybe there's a crab pinching at you or something like that. And that's why you feel, you know, a pinch on your arm or something like that. So they'll find ways to manipulate your memories and manipulate what you see and what you hear and what you feel and what you remember. And in that way, they can continue on without being noticed, you know, without people knowing what they're doing. And that's a fairly common thing that happens. And that's happened to a lot of my friends as well.
So we've talked about the greys, and obviously these are like a smaller being, aren't they? But there's other entities. And obviously you mentioned there were other people there. Like, we're talking other human beings, aren't we? You're seeing other children.
Yeah, definitely. There were always other humans there. Some of them were clearly there having been abducted, and some were clearly there working. I do think at some point too, if you want, we can back up to talk about the greys, because I think it's important to talk about them at some point, because that's the thing most people are familiar with and that most people have had an encounter of some sort, have encountered these grey entities. And so I think that's, and you'll hear other people talking about it. So if people are interested, that's something that's important to know, who and what they are, especially from a biblical perspective. But yeah, I did see other types of entities, and there were always, you know, other people there, whether they were working or whether they were being taken.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're definitely going to look at these entities, and like you've talked about the greys, and it is important. So I asked L.A. Morzuli what he believed they were, and he believed they're almost like an avatar. But could you just talk to us about the greys? You've seen these things multiple times. Could you describe them, like, you know, in detail, how they move? You know, do they speak? How do they speak? Things like that. What are they doing? What are they there for?
Sure. So the grey alien entities that most people encounter are a shorter, maybe 3 to 4 feet tall, usually, that people encounter. They all look very much the same. They have maybe a gray to beige skin. Sometimes it looks like they're wearing almost a skin tight suit. These entities are what I feel from my time with them and my interactions with them and with other entities. These entities are a biologically created entity. You know, we can create skin in a lab. We can create robots that look human, that you can't tell the difference to see or feel or touch them. That's what these kind of are like. They are basically a skin suit. And I have seen, and I have also found out that other people have seen these empty suits in the facilities or on the ships, in drawers or hanging up or in a corner, you know, whatever, where there's just nothing. They're not animated. They're not doing anything. They're just kind of laying there. But they look like grays, but they're just kind of, they're just piled. Like if a robot ran out of battery or something, you know. But what these entities are, in my opinion, and based on what I've noticed, because they're very frail, they have, they don't speak. They have like what looks like a line for a mouth and lines for a nose, but they don't appear to speak or breathe. They have eyes, but these are like almost like a big black lens. And they don't have any organs, external organs, like sexual organs that you can see anywhere. They all look exactly the same, but they do act differently. They do seem to have different, it's really hard to tell a personality without those things, but they do act a little bit differently. Some of them seem a little more rude and brusque. And when you do communicate with them, it's generally speaking to them with your mind. So what some people will call telepathy, I think that's, it's more of a ability to speak differently. And it's just something we don't do, the part of our brains that we don't utilize, but they do. And I believe that these entities are created to hold demons. Now, there's a difference between being demonic and being a demon. And what we know from the Bible, what we know from some of the extra canonical books like Jasher and Enoch, from ancient scrolls, ancient texts, and ancient literature all over the world, is that our understanding of demons is that they are the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim. Well, what are the Nephilim? Well, the Nephilim are, as we talked, almost touched on earlier, in the book of Genesis, Genesis 6, the book of Genesis says that there were a group of angels that fell. They found, and we all know that Satan and about a third of the angels fell. I think you just had a conversation with Ryan Peterson, so I'm sure he really covered this, so I'm not going to cover that in its entirety because that's a lot. But when they fell, and so they saw that the daughters of men were beautiful and decided to take wives of whomever they chose. That's Genesis 6, sorry. So if you go ahead and look at the book of Genesis 6, this sets up for what happens before the flood of Noah. And they began to have children with them. And these children were the Nephilim, the Gibberim, the mighty men of old, the giants at that time. And when the flood happens, the flood of the time of Noah, and these angels were chained in Tartarus, this first 200 that fell, they had to watch their offspring die in that flood. These giants, now these weren't human and they weren't angelic. They were a hybrid. They were a Nephilim. They were half and half. And that book, you know, God says, you're neither of this realm, you know, the angelic realm, nor of the earthly realm. And so those were the spirits were cursed to wander and to be the demonic spirits that we know today. We call them demons. And they're looking for something to inhabit, for a body to inhabit. I believe that's what's in those gray suits, because those gray suits are designed so that they can't harm someone physically or sexually, really. They can only just carry out tasks, very specific tasks. And I believe that these entities that we call aliens or ETs are fallen angelic beings. I mean, we have a couple of things this week. We have a creator, for those of us who believe in our creator God. Then we have the angelic beings that he created, right? And they have us, they're humans, and we have all the animals and those things, right? So we know a third of those angels fell. Where are they? What are they doing? What is their purpose right now to try to destroy the Christian church, the Christian people, to try to keep, you know, us from finding God, from finding salvation, to try to stop the message of Jesus? I mean, they couldn't stop Jesus from being born. That's what happened in Genesis 6. You know, Genesis 3:15 sets up that seed war. They're still trying to do that. They're still trying, you know, they're outnumbered. They're still trying to do that. So I believe that those demonic entities are what is in those suits. And the reason that they can be controlled is because the fallen angelic entities that are what we call ETs or aliens, they are kind of at a higher level because they're, you know, higher than we are. And then you've got these in between, these Nephilim, sorry for the cat behind me, and they can control them. They can tell them what to do. They're basically, you know, they're lower than these guys. So they can tell them, you know, and if they're looking for a body to inhabit, here's a body to inhabit, here's a job to do, and you get to terrorize people. That sounds like a perfect job for a demon, doesn't it? I mean, I think they could also run them with AI if they wanted to. I think they could create something similar to get into themselves if they wanted to. But beyond that, I know that's a long explanation, but I think a lot of people get it wrong as to what the grays are. And I've spent a lot of time around that. Now, there's another type of gray that I've also encountered. They are taller than these grays that come to take me, that have come to take me, and that I've heard others talk about coming to get them. They are taller. They look older. That doesn't mean they're older, but the ones I've seen, they've got a lot more age to their skin. They move their eyes. They can crinkle their face. Their eyes can move back and forth. It's freaky when they move their eyes because they'll move their eyes without moving their head at all. And their eyes are really big. So that always just, you know, gave me the real willies. But that's how you can tell the difference too. I mean, they actually move. They actually have, you know, look like they could do different things, you know, as opposed to the smaller grays that just, they always look too uniform and too perfect. That's because they are kind of a uniform, you know, they're made specifically for a specific task. So that, in my opinion, and that's shared by a lot of abductees. I've shared that and I've talked to them, and we really feel strongly about that based on being in contact with them. You know, they really don't, they just are carrying out tasks.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the word frail when you mentioned the little gray aliens, because I remember mm-hmm. listening to Travis Walton's interview regarding his abduction experience. And he said that he was obviously, when they were examining him or whatever, he started to freak out and he was flailing around with his arms and he struck one of these gray aliens. Mm-hmm. And I think I listened to it on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he asked him, he said, like, when you struck it, like, what did it feel like? He said, well, it felt even lighter than a small child, and it was weak. So when he struck it, it just like fell back easily. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're saying as well that these things are frail, it sort of corresponds to his experience as well. And you've also just said there that other abductees have said the same thing.
Right. And you think, how can this frail entity take people against their will? Well, they're also dealing with outside of, you know, with things that we don't have. So they're able to switch you off. They're able to make you think something else is happening. They're able to appear as something else, or make you think you see something else, not change their appearance necessarily. But, you know, so they're able to utilize physics and tools and things that we don't have, or that we don't understand, or maybe we didn't understand at the time. So that's how they can do it without being strong. You know, I was levitated up off the bed. I was levitated out a window. They didn't pick me up and physically carry me. They didn't need to. They had other means of doing that that didn't require them to be physically involved. They did not need to be strong. But yeah, I mean, they feel leathery, like touching an elephant, which I have, and they smell bad. They smell like a cross between a dead animal and sulfur, maybe. I don't know. It's just, it's hard to describe. Some of them don't smell as bad as others. I don't know why. Some of them had almost no smell at all, but maybe they learned to mask that at some point. And then they just, they look like you could just break them in half.
There's other entities though as well, isn't there, that are referred to as the Nordics. You've come across them as well. Describe what a Nordic is.
Nordics are entities that look a lot like us. They're very tall. They have much larger eyes. I'd say probably 50 to 75% larger than ours. Very kind of icy blue-green eyes, very fair, almost whitish hair, sometimes brownish hair too. It's weird. And I don't know if it was like their hair is translucent, so it kind of picks up colors maybe. I could never understand why I couldn't ever pinpoint a very specific color of the hair. And very fair skin. And the thing about the Nordics that really bothered me was that they were around me a lot when I was little. And my father's family was very fair skinned, fair eyed, tall, thin. And they, excuse me, my voice is going. I was terrified of that side of his family because they looked so much like them. They weren't, you know, they were normal human beings. I've had interviewers try to say, oh, then they must have been. No, they were normal humans. But as a small child, those similarities are enough to terrify you. You know, when you're a little kid and one dog tries to bite you, you're afraid of all dogs for a while, right? You know, and I'm not comparing them to dogs. I'm just saying, I'm not saying anything bad about dogs because I love dogs. But as a small child, you know, those similarities stick with you. And it was terrifying for me because the whole thing was terrifying as a small child. So anything that reminded me of them or looked like them, I would just have panic. I would just panic. So yeah, I've been in and seen Nordic types. I've seen the grays, the taller, older. Well, I call them taller, older, but I can't, they're not really older. So I should probably stop saying that because I don't know if they're older or not. And then I've seen the reptilian types. I haven't seen a good representation of what they look like out there, but I've had a lot of interaction with reptilian types. And then also I've seen, not up close, but they're always kind of far away, what they might call mantis types. They don't look like a giant insect, but the similarities in the long limbs and the shape of the face and the thinness of the body are why I think people compare them to a mantis.
Yeah. The reptilians is interesting because obviously throughout history, there's depictions of these reptilian beings. And obviously, you know, there's people, well, we've got a guy over here, David Icke, who talks about reptilians, and he's been mocked for that. And I have heard people say, you know, oh, he's a crazy guy. Well, that's fine. But I have said to people, listen, this reptilian thing has some basis. It's not just made up from nowhere.
No.
And like you've said, you've seen him yourself. And I know, like, I've looked into him a bit and I've seen some of the ancient artwork. And they've been called all kinds of things. I mean, Archons is one thing they're called. And we know that when Satan came into the Garden of Eden, when it talks about the serpent, he wasn't like a snake, like we would see a snake, like a slithering on his belly. He would have walked in. He was a reptilian being. So, you know, the
we don't know anything about how he looked necessarily. I mean, except that he was the most beautiful, you know. Yeah. So.
So, you had a handler. Tell us about the handler. Like, was the handler human handler? What did they look like? How did they speak to you?
That fits right into this conversation, actually, because there was one person who was with me from as young as I can remember, and he was with me all through my lifetime of abductions. And I, like I said, was abducted later into life. He appeared human. And I describe him in detail in the book. But what he did later in my life, because he was always with me. He appeared human. He helped me. He helped me through, you know, today you're going here, today we're doing this, or we're doing that, or whatever, tonight, or wherever we were. Made me feel like I had someone looking out for me, protecting me, you know, because if things were scary or there were scary entities around, I felt like, you know, this is the person I could trust. And I had a relationship with him, and he was just kind of hung out, made sure things were okay. As I got older, that relationship changed, and became more of a physical relationship. And he showed me his true form. He had the ability to change his form. And he shifted into what his true form was, which was the form of what you might call a reptilian. So his face was different. His skin was different. He was still pretty much really similar in physique, but like his ears were just almost non-existent, like really flat back against his head. And his nose was super flat and his mouth was longer and thinner. And, you know, it just, I describe him in detail too, in the book. I had Stockholm syndrome for, you know, a number of years with that, because it was someone, you know, as a child, I think I was groomed to be a part of whatever program they had going on. And then as a young adult, I think I just was pulled into this program, and they wanted me to just kind of share that message. That message is, we're here for, you know, peace and light and love and all that. And how can that be bad? And we just want to save the earth and all these other things. And, you know, that's fine. Those are all good things. And so he, you know, a big part of his job was to keep parroting that message to me and making sure I was, you know, and you can't tell anyone about this, and you can't let people know you're being taken. You can't, you know, bad things will happen. So that was a big part of his role, was to try to make sure I was staying on message if I was ever, you know, talking about it, which I didn't, and not to talk about it, you know, but to just to feed me lies and deception, really. And I really believe he was the fallen angelic entity.
So when you said he shape-shifted,
you know, I know that sounds out there for people listening. You know, you're like, what is she talking about? You know, the Bible tells us this, you know, you could be entertaining angels unawares. The Bible is full of this. I've had positive angelic encounters in my life. You hear stories all the time of people who've had that. It's not impossible. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, what I encountered was real, and it is very possible. And it's not just me. There are a lot of people out there who are terrified to come forward, who have had similar things happen to them throughout their lives. I mean, we're being treated like a science experiment, and it's terrible. And people need to know how to just, you know, that they can stop it, and that it is real, and not to treat people poorly when you hear someone with a story like this, because most people's first reaction is to laugh or scoff or say, okay, you know, she's crazy, let's go get her checked in. No, that's not what it is. It's real. It's real. And it's terrifying. Sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. Get off my soapbox now.
No, it's fine, Karen. I mean, I've said it to people in the past, you know, like you said, the first reaction is to laugh, to mock. And then I say to them, well, have you actually ever looked into it ever? I mean, you know, there's who knows how many cases are out there of people who's been abducted. I've read of loads of cases, you know, like I said earlier, from all spheres of society, you know, from doctors to policemen to housewives, whatever. And I just find it's pride and arrogance when people can just sort of dismiss this when they absolutely have never done any research on it whatsoever. I mean, I've heard of cases of people who've been, you know, outside the house banging on the door, and their family members come down the wire for the husband or whatever, and they've opened the door and they're like, what are you doing out here? And they're like, I don't know. They've been, and the door's been locked, they have no keys on them,
right?
You know, and they've turned up with injuries and everything.
If you haven't watched Elia Marzulli's fourth movie in the UFO series about UFO abductions, and not just you, but everyone out there, watch that, because Emil Jewick is in there. He was, he had an implant removed, and that's in there too. They videoed that.
Patient 17.
He was found out, you know, and that's a shame that they did that, because they really took advantage of Emil and Elia Marzulli doing that movie, because they took things that weren't theirs and permissions that weren't theirs to take. And I feel really bad about that, because the people who really did the Emil himself and LA, you know, were the people who really did the work on that. But not the Patient 17 movie, but he was actually Patient 17. Yeah. And that was LA's footage of taking that out. But Emil would find himself outside as a small child. I mean, they'd lock him and put the padlocks on the door, and he'd find himself outside as a small child. And they couldn't figure out, like, are you an escape artist? But the lock's still on the door. It's a padlock on the outside of the door. How do you do that? You don't. You know, and there's too many stories like that, and too many of us. And, you know, people want to laugh and ridicule and say, well, you know, the expression on your face, or you're looking in the wrong direction when you're talking about that, that means you're lying. I'm like, no, you know, it doesn't. It doesn't. These are really hard stories to tell. And I've had interviews where I'm crying. I've had interviews where we end the interview and then I go have my breakdowns, you know, because I'm trying to hold it together because I really want to share this, because I want people to know that, you know, it's okay if this has happened to you and you can stop it. And, you know, there needs to be more people out there who are willing to listen. And there need to be more churches who are willing to help people pray and pray against the things that are demonic in this world. Because what is the church about but the battle between good and evil? And our churches, our leaders, you know, our worship leaders and people like that should be helping us in those battles. And there was no one to help me in this battle. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I had to figure it out and find random people and people, you know, that weren't associated with any specific church or my specific church or what have you, to learn how to rebuke this, to get rid of it, and to realize this is the same thing. I can rebuke this like anything else. And when I did that, they left. You know, they were gone. You know, they had to leave me. They weren't allowed to touch me. They couldn't come near me. And they were not happy about that. But I'm thrilled about that. And I want that for everyone else who's going through this. And they don't want this message out there either. You know, the number of attacks and things that I've had come against me since I've tried to do this, they don't want to lose their, you know, the people of this world that they get to just pick from as they choose. But they're going to, they could, if everyone knew that the authority of Jesus is all that you need to call on. We don't have the authority, but Jesus does. And if you call on that authority, it has to stop. Period. End of story. There is no bargaining on that. And they know it. They know the hierarchy. They know who Jesus is. They know where he stands. And they know when you call on him, their jig is up. They have to leave you alone. And they don't like it. They hate it. But hey, you know, then you're safe. Yeah. You're safe. So
it's important for people to understand this regarding these aliens and regarding the name of Jesus and everything. I had an interview with a gentleman who is a Christian guy, but he told me about two other guys he'd spoken to who weren't Christians, who were studying crop circles. And he said, who do you think these alien beings are? And these two gentlemen have been studying crop circles for over a decade. And they weren't Christians, like I said, but they said that whoever they are, they're liars. And why is it that they're supposedly coming from across the universe and they're obsessed with Jesus and putting down his message and putting him down? So they, as non-Christians, even seen that there was this like religious aspect to this phenomena. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people to know that this isn't little green men coming from other planets. That's not what it is. And I said that I did three-part series I mentioned to you off air, and I said that in that these are not little green men. These are not benevolent space brothers. Benevolent space brothers don't go around abducting children.
No, don't even get me on that soapbox, because I'll tell you what, there are people out there who have written books, who go on shows, who are very popular, who say, they're a love and light. These are our space brothers. They're just trying here to help us. You know, I astral project with them all the time or whatever. Look, and there are people that are asking, you know, that are encouraging people to call on these things and call spaceships down and things like that. And I'm here to tell you, please do not call on entities like this. You don't know what they are. You don't know who they are. And you don't know what you're getting yourself into. And there are good entities. There are really wonderful, good, benevolent, angelic entities out there. And then there are fallen. And just because you know the difference between happy and sad and good and bad does not mean you know the difference between a benevolent and a malevolent angelic being. You don't. When someone comes up to scam you or hurt you, they don't come up to you and say, "Hey, I'm about to carjack you," and with a smile on their face. No, they don't. Okay, that's not how, you know, it works. It's, you know, they don't come up. Well, I guess I probably said that wrong, but you know what I mean? When someone wants to scam you, they're going to scam you. They're going to say, "Hey, how are you? I just want to offer you this free pamphlet." They don't, you know, say, "I'm about to steal your purse." Okay. You know, and that's just the nature of good and evil. You know, you don't know what you're dealing with. And our Bible tells us we're not supposed to mess with these things because of that, because Satan is a trickster, because demonic entities lie, because demons are dangerous. So we have to stay away from those things. And for the people who say they're all had all these wonderful positive experiences, the funny thing about that, and I've listened to a few or read a few just to try to understand, there's a few things to look out for. If someone tells you, don't ever listen to or read something about something that's opposite of what I'm saying, that's a problem. Always explore everything and make sure you've taken in all the facts that you can find and taken all opinions into account before you make a choice and a decision. You know, don't ever trust someone who says, don't listen to the other people, just listen to me. The other thing is, I've listened to some of these and they all have stories of being terrified or hurt or kidnapped or taken against their will. How is that benevolent? I mean, if you're so smart and so wonderful and so kind and loving and you're here to help us and save us, then just show up, sit down, have a conversation with whomever you choose, the leaders or just the people or what have you. But you don't abduct people against their will and insert, you know, things into their bodies and harm them and do the other things that are being done. That's not okay. You know, scaring people isn't benevolent. Taking little kids, like you said, isn't benevolent. So you just, you know, just I'm just asking people to really look at it with their eyes open and really think about when you hear something, what they're saying. Have they really had a good experience, or are they making excuses for the bad parts of that experience? Like someone maybe in an abusive relationship might do. So.
Yeah, it's definitely sinister. People mm-hmm. need to definitely understand that. Just moving away from sort of the entities, we've talked quite a bit about them. What about the spacecraft? Because obviously they took you on a spacecraft. Could you describe the inside of the craft? And I spoke to Elaine. He said that you've actually flown the craft. Could you tell us about that as well, how they like trained you or whatever?
Right. I do. And I write about that in the book. Here's the thing about that. I don't want this to sound like it was some fun, awesome adventure that everyone should go try to get on themselves. So I do write about it because I think it's important. I don't want to glorify it in any way or glamorize it in any way. I was taught how to do that, how to fly these craft, not all of them, but a very specific one. I was really bought into what they were doing at the time, really into the New Age at the time. Not that that has a correlation. I'm just saying that was not a good move for me, and that was far from my Christianity. And I was believing what they were selling. I was buying what they were selling. I was believing the lies. Mm-hmm. When I had the opportunity to do that, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I'm so sorry. There was a seat that I would sit in that literally just molded around my body, even to the point of my hands. So I was almost like immobilized. And you seem like you flew, it seemed like you flew this. I flew the ship with just the slightest movements of my hands, with thoughts and just understanding. And like, it was like I was connected in to the ship itself. The ship was alive, is the only way I can describe it. The ship was alive and we just moved as one. There was always another entity with me, and it was usually, it seemed like a little like shiplet, for lack of a better word, that kind of would peel off of a bigger one. It would kind of like pop off, and then it was almost like driving a like a mini, you know, because it's such a small thing, but there you don't, you see through them. Everything is clear. You can see all around you, up and down and all around. It's like they're clear, although I don't know from the outside what that looks like, if it looks clear just from the inside you can see out, or if it is from the outside. But it was exhilarating. It was fascinating. It was wild. It was crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, roller coaster feelings. I mean, I can still feel it when I think about it. But at the same time, it was just one of those things to keep drawing you in. Here, we're gonna let you do this, we're gonna let you do that. Now ignore the bad stuff we're doing to you. Ignore the fact that you've just had another pregnancy go missing. You know, here's your reward for being a good girl and going along with the program, not talking about it. Once you start talking about it, once you start deciding you're done being abused and being a part of that, then the fun ends. So that's why I don't like to talk about it too much, because, you know, while it was pretty cool, it was really cool, there's a price. It comes at a really hefty price that I got to do that. So as far as the ships go, I was underground a lot. And I described, you know, some of those facilities. The one ship I remember was like a transport ship from the outside of it what it looked like. I don't ever remember it coming down and landing or anything like that. So I don't have any of those kinds of ship memories, but I have the interior. The interior was kind of a gray beige. It had rows and rows of like bench seats, but they had like indentations where each person would kind of sit, and they would just be kind of gathering people up and putting them on this like transport ship. And then where we ended up, you get out, and it was just, I don't know if it was a bigger ship or if it was underground. I'm not sure, because they don't sit down to you. Now you're here on, you know, Spaceship X on Alpha Centauri B or whatever. It was huge. You come out and you could tell it was enclosed, but it was bigger than the biggest airport I've ever seen, you know, being inside. It was just massive. And people were just kind of walking around zombie-like most of the time. I mean, I had my handler and I knew where to go, so I would just go over there where I knew I was supposed to go. And, you know, they would just be kind of feeding people through lines, almost like you would see at an airport or something like that, into specific places. And then whenever they were done, you know, back onto these little transport vehicles and back home. I, beyond that, I don't have any other, you know, I don't think there's any other kind of details that you would find interesting, you know, but pretty much the ships, when you're on them, you can see through them. They all seem to be alive, some sort of a living mechanism. It's very different from the inside than from the outside. They seem to move with you. Like if you move towards the edge where it looks like it's coming down, and you would think that you'd have to stop walking here because you would hit the ceiling. That doesn't happen. It actually moves. Maybe, I don't know how, but it changes so that you can actually walk through to that. I know that sounds crazy, but that's exactly how it works. So the ships seem to be sort of alive in a way. And it's something beyond anything we have and beyond anything we understand. But, you know, think about it this way. 200 years ago, if the space shuttle went flying over Delaware, the settlers there would have no idea what that was or how it worked, right? It's not that outrageous to think that there is technology that we don't understand yet.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the pride of man likes to lead us to think that we know all kinds of things. We know next to nothing of how the universe works or what's going on. And we certainly have not really much of an idea. Even the so-called experts on this, we don't really know what we're talking about.
No.
I mean, it's fallen angel technology. I mean, and clearly they are going to be way more advanced than anything we can produce, because they're far more intelligent than we are, far more powerful. But you mentioned there when you were talking about missing pregnancy, and obviously your book is called Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest. Could you tell us about that? Because that seems to be like one of the purposes of you being taken, doesn't it?
It does. I believe I was part of a breeding program. And that's why I named the book that, because the hardest part about this and the ugliest part about this and the part that seems to be extremely widespread and not just me, and the part that our government has even admitted is a thing is the missing pregnancies, you know. And I was getting pregnant and getting the pregnancies confirmed, going to the doctor or going into the hospital because I wasn't feeling good, but I hadn't had a miscarriage or anything. And going into the hospital and there's no baby. And they're even going and doing a DNC and there's no fetal tissue. And I am mourning a baby I never got to bury. I never got to, you know, if it was a boy or a girl, you know, and I was married when these things happened. So it's not like it was unusual for me to get pregnant. You know, everything was in place that I could get pregnant. But having this happen over and over again, that was really the hardest part of all this. And that's the hardest part, one of the hardest things to talk about, and then I've since been able to talk to some other women who've gone through this. And, you know, as a mother, I mean, I've had children, I have beautiful children. That's just wrong. You know, and they're utilizing us as a breeding tool to create a hybrid being, a modern day Nephilim, if you will. And I think they take them during the first trimester because our bodies are designed to know when something's wrong with that fetus, when it's not normal, we reject it, right? I think that after Noah, I think after the flood, a lot of changes happened. Because, you know, before then, it seems that there's a lot more interaction with angelic beings. It seems like, you know, the giants were on the earth in those days and also after that, but not in as great a numbers and not as easily. And I think there were some changes that happened. I think one of those changes is I think God designed our bodies to reject those fetuses when something isn't human. And I think that's why they take them within that first trimester, because I don't think we would be able to, our bodies know they can't carry it. And that's all God, you know. Praise God. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I really thought because there were these things, these babies were part me, that I wanted to meet them. I wanted to help them, that, okay, they're half good. You know, I didn't understand at the time that I was thinking this, what a Nephilim was. I didn't understand what a hybrid entity really was. And that this isn't something that God has created, that God has said, okay, we're going to create this. You know, this is not a part of God's kingdom. It's not something God intended. And I'm not saying that they're not, whether they're redeemable or not. That's not for me to say. That's only for God to say. But that's what I felt after I did then have an encounter with them. They were just evil. They were, and, you know, and I, well, it's hard to talk about. I do write about the encounter that I had with them. And I think God allowed that to happen so that I would understand that I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't, you know, because I was like, if they're out there, then, and if I can do something, then darn it, I'm going to do it. As a mom, I'm going to do it. If there's something I can do, I'm going to do it. And I felt like I wasn't doing something that I should be doing. And I think God allowed that encounter so that I would realize, no, I've done what I should do. And there's nothing I can do for them. And they really were just, they wanted me to come with them, but they were just, there was no love. There was no kindness. It was just, it was dark. It was evil. They didn't have any care or feeling or compassion towards me. And while I could tell they were mine, there were three of them. I could also tell they would have taken me out in a hot second if they could have. Do you know what I mean? I felt very unsafe and very insecure. And then I called on Jesus and they were gone like that. And then I, you know, I'm like, why would this happen? You know, I'm born again. I'm spirit filled. I've stopped the abductions. Why now? Why this? It was God's way of giving me that closure, I think. I really do. Because no harm came to me. They were far enough away. They weren't able to hurt me in any way. And I really felt that that's another important message to get out there to someone. If someone thinks that something like this has happened to them, don't go looking for that child. Or, you know, if you really feel strongly about it, then just pray about it and let God give you whatever that answer is. Because there just didn't seem to be anything there. There was nothing there that I could do. But that is, yeah, yes, the book, Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest.
Just from listeners who are just listening on audio, when Karen was recounting that story, I can assure you she was very, very emotional. And I was looking at her and, you know, you can see that it's such a traumatic experience that she's had. And obviously, it's, we talked and it was, it's basically,
Sorry about that. I'm trying really hard not to get upset. I've had interviews where I've had to pause because you just can't, it doesn't ever get easier. No. I'm sorry.
I mean, I can't imagine, and I'm not going to pretend to, but obviously it's a breeding program we're talking about. And it was said that in 1954, there was this Griada Treaty with the Eisenhower administration where he was said to have agreed with alien races in exchange for advanced technology that they'd allow them to sort of experiment. I mean, when you listening to you talk, I mean, that seems like that could be realistic, because obviously we know there is a breeding program. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think that there's something to it. I don't necessarily think Eisenhower was able to get anywhere with them, but I do think that an agreement was made. I think it was probably a shadowy offshoot of our government, or a group that made that agreement, said that had the authority to speak for our country. Because once you give that authority, you're opening that door, that threshold, and saying, okay, you're giving permission. Because in the demonic and satanic world, you have, it's a lot of noise. I'm like, something is in the room with me. It is a cat. I'm like, do I need to pray over this? No, in the demonic and satanic world, you have, you know, there are rules. God has set a very specific hierarchy, and there has to be permission given somewhere for an entity to be able to enter in and do certain things. And you may not realize you've done it. It could be as simple as accepting a gift. It could be as simple as accepting an invitation. It could be someone in your family. It could be a government official saying, I'm giving you permission to take and utilize the people and the animals of our country for your experimentation in exchange for technology and information. I mean, look at the boom in technology from that point forward. I mean, we went from barely having electricity to going to the moon in 10 years, give or take. It's kind of crazy, right? I mean, look how long it took us to get to the printing press. And then all of a sudden, there we are. I mean, you know, this crazy technology and everything that we got that has happened in the last 100 years is an incredible, in the last 60 years, has been an incredible boom in technology and information compared to where we were. So you go at the snail's pace, and then all of a sudden you're going up, you know, like a straight up line as far as the amount of technology. No, you know, there's really something to that. And I do believe that there was a deal was made. I absolutely do. And the reason I bring it up in my book, I talk about that in the book, and I talk about I write about Roswell a little bit too, is just to kind of bring home that, you know, our government has been in on this for a long time. And they've been lying to us for a long time. And we know this because back in December of 2017, in the New York Times article came out, the Black Money, you know, and all that programs article. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know, they're like, no, we're not studying anything. We're not studying UFOs. Oh, well, yeah, we are. And this is the name of the program. Or we're not doing this. Oh, well, yeah, there are people who have burns and unexplained pregnancies and brain anomalies. I had a brain tumor. I mean, all these crazy things that people can't just tell me why they happen. And now the government's saying, oh, yeah, we know about all that. You know, so they've been lying and they keep lying. And then they're like, so we're going to have this great congressional, you know, thing here. And everyone's listening to the whistleblowers. And 90% of it is, we're going to take this into a meeting, but y'all can't hear. And we're going to talk about a lot of really cool things that we're not going to share with you. And now they're leaving it up to everyone's imaginations to fill in those blanks. And then what that does, if they come back and say, well, we told you, we just couldn't tell you any details. So are they trying to get some kind of plausible deniability, or I don't know what the word would be, but, you know, it's like they're trying to backtrack a little bit, backpedal. I don't think, and I've been asked this a lot, do you think we'll ever get full disclosure? Heck no, I don't. Because to do that, they'd have to admit what they did to people like me. They'd have to admit to what has happened to little children and to the beautiful cows in the field that are found dead and drained of blood. God knows, you know, did that cow suffer? Did I suffer? Yes. Do other children suffer? Yes. Do people suffer? Absolutely. And who gave that permission? You know, and full disclosure would mean full disclosure. That would mean admitting to, well, yeah, we made this deal. Gee, we didn't think it would be that bad. What did you think was going to happen? This is a superior race of beings that are far advanced from us. You know, and so anyway, that's my answer to Granada Treaty. And I'm sorry that went a little longer than.
No, it's fine. It's interesting you mentioned the cows. I remember watching a documentary a long time ago, even before I was a Christian, and it was on this cattle mutilation.
Linda Moulton Howe,
I can't remember which one it was. It was a long time. I mean, it was well over 20 years ago where I watched it, and how they drained the blood out of them completely. And at the time, I was like, that is not normal. Like, there's no human beings are doing this.
Yeah, and there's no drops of blood around it. There's no blood trail. No. There's no, you know, the way that the cuts are precision, you know, and the other cows won't go near it and the scavengers won't go near it. I mean, I grew up on a cattle farm, and when something died, you know, every animal within whatever radius was on there getting their part, you know, but not if it's a mutilated cow like that. No, they don't go near it. So, yeah, there's, you know, they're, the fact that they've been given from somewhere along the line, they were given permission. And I do believe that that's who's doing this to the cattle. I believe that these entities are taking the cattle, taking the blood, using it. I think sometimes some of it's used for these gray suits that they manufacture. You know, bovine blood is very compatible with human blood. So I believe they're using them for these fetuses that they take. In the book, I explain what ectogenesis is. And you and I talked about that a little bit before that was a new one for you. Ectogenesis is bringing a fetus to maturity outside of a human womb or outside of the natural womb. We can do that now. I mean, it's not something, if you said 10, 15 years ago, ectogenesis, people would have thought that was something out of a science fiction movie, but it's not. We can do it. It's been in the news. It's all over artificial wombs. I think they're using the bovine blood to help these babies mature. I've seen in the facilities where they would take me, the fetuses in a fluid that I don't know if it was the lighting, because everything was always very dimly lit, or like red lighting, like kind of a red or a dim light, never like a bright light or a white light. But it looked like, you know, they were in a clear red substance. So I don't think it was blood, but I think they're using the bovine blood for that. I think they're using it for the grays. And so it's not so unusual to think now about the things that I've been, you know, trying to talk about my whole life that no one would believe, but now all of a sudden science is catching up. Imagine that. So that's ectogenesis, though, basically. It's the ability to bring a fetus and viable outside of the womb.
It's interesting when you were saying about the lies, because I did a Freedom of Information request years ago to the Ministry of Defense regarding UFOs. I've still got the letter somewhere, and they just come back with, yeah, we don't look into UFOs. Mm-hmm. And then a number of years ago, they've released multiple documents now that you can go online and read about them. So it's like, why did you all them years ago tell me you don't even look into them?
Right. It's like, wait a minute. So you're allowed to just lie to us when it's convenient for you? And that's exactly what they did to you. And that's exactly what they've done here in our country too. And it's like, well, who decides that those lies are helpful to, you know, that's what's best for us. You know, basically somebody's out there deciding what's best for me as an adult. Well, when do I get to make that choice? I'm not deciding for anyone else on anything else. Yes, I have my own values and belief systems that I stand by. And so I'm not going to support things that go outside my values, my belief systems, but I'm also not going to, you know, and I'll tell someone, I'll share that with someone how I feel, but I'm not going to tell someone what to do either. That's, as an adult, that's their choice, right?
Yeah.
So why are they deciding for us, you know, and that it's okay to be taken, that it's okay to be experimented on, that it's okay to lie to us about it? It's not okay. It's not okay.
No. I'm just so thankful that one day this will all be over when the Lord comes, because it's such a dark world. It's such a dark world, but for us as Christians, there's that hope, that sure hope, that one day it will be over, all this darkness.
Oh,
so obviously we've been talking about, I mean, just as in closing, this is really where I want to sort of, for you to tell us really like about when it stopped and give people hope who possibly have been abducted and don't know where to turn. So could you just speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. It stopped when I was born again, when I renewed my faith. You know, I had born again before and fallen away, but it stopped when I renewed my faith and I realized that I could call on the authority of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and that he would be there for me and protect me and save me from this whenever I called on him. You know, he is, you know, there's a pecking order, you know, just like in anything else, there's a leader. He's at the top of that. And when you call on him, they know that he's at the top. And they have to leave you alone. So for anyone going through that, you know, I encourage you, listen to things like this podcast, Beyond the Paradigm. Listen to biblical podcasts that are teaching you about the whole Bible. Like one of my favorites is Bible Mysteries with Scott Mitchell. Find something that's going to teach you about the whole Bible to help you with your faith. Find a good Bible-believing church to get into. If you're afraid to talk to them, I get it. I understand. I couldn't talk to them either at my church, but at least I could get the help that I needed as far as knowing what my protection was from God. And being born again and spirit-filled is, you know, that's it. Then we know our names are written in the book of life that can never be taken away from you, no matter what anyone says to you, no matter what anyone does, no matter what you do. That can't be taken away from you. Your name is in the book of life. You know, God wants you with him, and he loves you. And it's not hard work to be born again, to be a Christian, or to, you know, to be dedicated to your life to God and to believe that Jesus came and died for our sins. It's not hard work. It's the easiest thing you'll ever do. People make it sound like it's going to be hard work because people won't do it, but it's the most wonderful, amazing, easiest thing. The hardest thing for me was falling on my knees and just regretting and repenting all the terrible things I'd done, you know, that I felt were bad, that I was just like, oh, Lord, you know, after all you've done for me, I wish I could have done better, but we're sinful. It's going to happen. And I'm going to keep messing up. I'm going to mess up every day. It's just, that's how it is. And God gets that. God gets us. He knows us. He loves us. And he wants us to find him. Doesn't want this to happen to us. Doesn't want anyone to be abducted. Doesn't want anyone to be taken. Doesn't want anyone to suffer or be scared, be afraid. You don't have to do that. So I highly recommend, just, you know, find someone to reach out to, pray. Just get on your knees and pray. God will hear you. God will listen to you. God will save you. Yeah. And that's how it stopped for me. And that's how it can stop for anyone. Not just me. I'm not special. I'm no one special. I'm just your average, ordinary person. So.
Just for anyone who's thinking to themselves, you know, well, how does God understand? I'll tell you how God understands, because he came down to this earth in the person of his blessed son. And he lived amongst us. He had every, you know, problem that we had, but he was without sin. He felt pain when he was crucified. He was in extreme pain. He felt sadness. He said the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. He lived amongst ordinary people. He grew up. He's had the full human experience, so he does understand us. We can never say that about him, because the Lord does understand, and he's in heaven right now, awaiting to come back. So, Karen, just as we wrap this up now, where can people get your book, and where can they get hold of you if they want to speak to you regarding like abduction or anything?
Yes. Well, hopefully you can put these in your show notes, because they're hard names to spell. The book is available right now exclusively at lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net for right now. This is just for the first printing. You can find me at my website, karinwilkinsonauthor.com. It's K-A-R-I-N. I probably shouldn't. I'll let you put it in the show notes. It's a lot to spell out. It's spelled differently. So, and then you can find me on Facebook under just my name, Karin, K-A-R-I-N Wilkinson. If you look up Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest, that'll pop up too. You'll see the book shows up as my picture. So that makes it easier to find me. You can find me on Instagram, Karin Wilkinson Author there. On Facebook, it's just plain my name. It's easier that way. I realize my name's pretty long. I have to cut the author part off. So those are the easiest ways you can find me. You can email me through my website if you have a story you want to share, if you're just looking to reach out and you need help or encouragement. I promise you I will read your email and I will do my utmost best to get back to you. Like I said, I do hear from a lot of people, but I really do want to help in any way I can, or at least help you find a place that can help. And I will post this link on my website, and I will be posting links to some websites that I will, once I have fully vetted them, that I can recommend for people to go to also to get support who might have been through similar things as I have. So those will be up there soon. They're not there yet.
Thanks for that, Karen. It's been a fascinating talk. It's great to end on a positive, though, when we tell people about the Lord and everything. So, guys, if anyone wants to contact me as well, you can get me on beyondtheparadigm@yahoo.com. That's the quickest way to get hold of me. Like I said before, I'm on Instagram at Paradigm1979 or Twitter at Paradigm_79. I'll be back next week with a new guest. It's been a fascinating interview today, Karen. It's a challenging topic. I understand that for people, but I would encourage people to do their own research. Like Karen said earlier in the interview, don't just believe this person or believe that person. Right. Have a look at the whole picture and do your own research. So thank you again, guys, for listening. Thank you, Karen. And I'll be back next week on Beyond the Paradigm.
Am I crazy? We don't use that word in here.